All right, welcome to October 4th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because I'm on a mission from Uncle Sam to make American history as fun and exciting as one can make a history podcast. I assembled this show from a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. By the way, if you're looking to move to the area, or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com, because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So yeah, check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. And now, let's begin the show as we customarily do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags, put our right hands over our hearts, and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen, brothers and sisters. And now moving on to today's headlines. We'll wish a happy birthday to Rutherford B. Hayes. And the Soviets launched Sputnik Part 1. All right, so now here I go. 1822. Happy birthday, Rutherford Hayes. Born in Delaware, Ohio in 1822, Hayes attended Kenyon College and in 1842 graduated from Harvard Law. After 5 years of law practice in Lower Sandusky, he moved to Cincinnati, where he became a prominent young Whig lawyer. In 1852, he married Lucy Webb, who would be the first presidential wife to graduate from college. By the way, she would also be the first lady to be called the First Lady. Hayes is one of 7 presidents who fought in the Civil War. He was seriously wounded in the Battle of South Mountain in Maryland, and by the end of the war, he rose up the ranks to Major General. After the war, Hayes was elected to the House of Representatives, then the Governor of Ohio in 1868. He accepted the nomination, however decided not to campaign, saying, quote, "An officer fit for duty who at the crisis would abandon his post to electioneer ought to be scalped," unquote. Hayes was easily elected and entered Congress in December 1865. Between 1867 and 1876, he served 3 terms as governor of Ohio. Safe liberalism, loyalty to the Republicans, a good war record, and Mark Twain's endorsement made Hayes an acceptable Republican candidate in 1876. Kinda. The Republican Party was in bad shape due to President Grant's corruption allegations in Washington, an economic depression, and northern dissatisfaction with the Reconstruction in the South. He opposed Governor Samuel J. Tilden of New York, whom I should be talking about instead of Rutherford Hayes. But his fraudulency won the election. Here's how. Tilden won the popular vote by an astonishing 250,000 votes. However, 3 states had conflicting ballot reports. Louisiana, South Carolina, and, wait for it, that's right, scholars, Florida. The commission that double-checked the voting results from these states was primarily Republican, and in the end, old 8-7 Hayes had 185 electoral votes, and Tilden had 184. And that, my friends, is why I'm not talking about Sam Tilden. As president, Hayes proved to be much more honest than his predecessor and asserted that his cabinet appointments must be based on virtue, not politics, which angered Republicans. Hayes pledged protection of the rights of Negroes in the South, but at the same time advocated the restoration of the wise, honest, and peaceful local self-government. This meant the withdrawal of troops from the South. There was a new South and a new Republican Party, but although Southern leaders embraced Republican conservatism, they would face annihilation at the polls if they were to join the party of the Reconstruction. Hayes was persistent, but could not win over the solid South. Hayes announced in advance that he would serve only 1 term and retired to his home in Fremont, Ohio in 1881. He died in 1893. Happy birthday, Rutherford!
1927. Gutzon Borglum begins work on Mount Rushmore. 90% of that work was used by dynamite, which blew over 420,000 tons of rock. Mount Rushmore, located in the Black Hills National Forest of South Dakota, shows the faces of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, and of course, me. Aren't I handsome? The one who came up with the idea was actually Dwayne Robinson, who wanted to attract more people to his state. If you've never seen it, it's free, unless you park at the memorial, which has a parking fee. Over 3 million people visit Mount Rushmore per year. And that's it for October 4th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Thanks for listening.
1957. Soviets launch Sputnik Part 1. If you were alive during the 1950s, and if you had a ham radio, you might have been wondering what that beepy noise was. But you probably would have found out about the world's first artificial satellite, let alone what the heck that even was, until the news hit the headlines the following day. About the size of a baseball and weighing less than 184 pounds, the Traveling Companion, aka the Sputnik, contained four antennae, a radio transmitter, some batteries, and a thermometer. That's it. It was the USSR's way of getting a head start on the space race against the United States while America was still in the locker room getting shoes tied. Rewind for a moment to 1952, when the International Council of Scientific Unions designated a cycle of solar activity beginning July 1st, 1957 through December 31st, 1958 as IGY, or International Geophysical Year. Since President Dwight Eisenhower figured he'd have a few years, space and tech wasn't exactly on his front astroburner. I just made up that word, so you don't have to look it up. Well, the Soviets obviously weren't waiting for the IGY to make a move, and up went the Traveling Companion, flying around Earth at 8,000 miles per hour, circling the planet every 90 minutes or so, and heading directly over the United States 7 times a day. And what was the deal with those blips? If you're an American during the Cold War, you might think it's a secret code. How would President Eisenhower respond? To be continued in tomorrow's ep, Soviets launch Sputnik Part 2. And so that, my friends, is going to wrap it up for October 4th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's program. For instance, what's your take on that story about Sam Tilden? I mean, Rutherford Hayes. Do you realize that that election remains to this day the most widely disputed election in American history? Or what about Mount Rushmore? Have you ever been there? I almost went recently, actually, but my passport was expired and I couldn't go. It's a long story. Crazy story, though. So yeah, let me know what you think. You can also take a stab at some of the multiple choice quizzes while you're on the website. Good luck with those. And don't miss tomorrow's program. Another presidential birthday, this one for Chester Arthur, and the Soviets launch Sputnik Part 2. So don't miss that. In the meantime, you can catch me on Facebook and Twitter. So thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. We'll see you tomorrow.